Hello, and welcome to Dating, Mating, and Relating with Carly Stein. Tonight I have a special guest with me, Rick Taylor. He's a great colleague and friend, and every time I get together with Rick, we spend hours and hours talking, so I'm very excited to have him on the show tonight.
Me too. Rick, hey, Carly. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Great.
Wonderful.
I'm glad to be here and out of the snow and in warm on the radio with you.
Wonderful. Well, let me tell the audience a bit about you, Rick. Rick is a personal coach and therapist for men. He helps men find their personal gifts and use them to fulfill their deeper life purpose in their relationships and career. There are a lot of great guys out there, but a lot of them have accepted a script for life that has been given to them by their parents, their girlfriends, wives, or their culture. They live out of this script with a sense of duty, but it's not of their own design, so it feels like living in a box. And it feels risky to break out of the box, so they stay there and let resentment build up. But when Rick asked men about these times in their life, men are most fulfilled when they tell Rick stories about doing things they're really good at and taking risks while doing it. And they describe it as feeling alive and on fire. And who doesn't want to feel like that? So
right.
Rick's job is to help them become alive, so to speak.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Wow, I wish I'd written that. That was awesome. So what are we going to talk about tonight?
Well, Rick, I love talking to you, especially because I love working with men and hearing what you do with working with men. So,
yeah.
You know, and I know, like, just first let's talk to the audience and tell them, like, how you got to where you are now. Tell
right.
us a bit about you.
Right, right. Well, I was born with an affliction where I actually listen to people with empathy and I can tap into what's going on for them emotionally. That was hard to deal with for a long time, and I finally got to where I accepted it. I left the corporate world and started my private practice about 3 years ago. And I love doing what I do. And before that, I was in management and project and senior project management, working in IT and technical projects, and learned a lot. But I have to say, it was something that I learned how to do the skill of it. But I never really felt like I could just wake up in the morning and start doing that work. Right around 1999, I got involved with men's work, and I found that I could do that. I could almost wake up in the morning and just start doing that. And there's a big difference. And for most people, that's what they're after. They want to be able to make a difference in the world and help other people. And so many of us let that go, so that not only make a living. I mean, we'll make a living, but a lot of us buy into a script that tells us, well, not only do we need to make a living, we need to make a really good living at all costs. And maybe not at all costs, but there should be some cost involved. And I bought that story for a really long time. And so when I started the practice, I kept seeing this one type of guy would come in, not a particular man, but I kept seeing traits and threads and patterns. And as I kept seeing that over time, I sort of took mental notes and put them. I would work with these guys with all these various issues, but there were really only about five areas where I would work. And so I decided to turn that into a coaching program, because I've paid for coaching and I've paid for counseling. I'm in my second marriage, and at the end of the first marriage, we went to counseling, and I had a really horrible experience with counseling. And so when I built the counseling practice, I wanted to find these areas of life where we could work, and it would, just with a little bit of work, have a big impact. Because guys don't want to go to therapy if they don't have to. And So I thought, well, let's work on areas that are very specific, and because they'll come in and they'll say, Rick, okay, I'm here. How much is this going to cost? How long is it going to take? What do I have to do? Just tell me what I got to do to get out of the mess that I'm in. And then we do the work, and then they move on. The guys, that's kind of how guys are. So I wanted the work to be really specific. And so that was a long answer, wasn't it? I got into it because I'm kind of born with a personality that works really well doing this kind of work. Yeah.
Well, good. Long answers are always good. Don't worry about it.
Okay. All right.
So, Rick, we've had long conversations about this. The nice guy or the bad boys? What do women really want?
Well, can I ask you that question? Because, I mean, what do you think? I want to hear your answer first. What do you think women want?
You can. I think they want a combination of the both. So,
All right.
So there's qualities in a bad boy that women are attracted to. So,
like what?
Bad boys are typically very masculine.
Uh-huh.
They lead the way. They're confident.
Yeah.
And, you know, a woman is very attracted to that. It's like women are physiologically attracted to that alpha male.
Yeah.
Like the cells in our body go to the alpha male. Nice guy has great intentions, but the follow-through isn't so great.
Right. Yeah. Well, it comes down to what kind of guy would you want to bring home to meet your mom or your even more important, your dad. And you want to, I guess what I'm hearing you say is you want it right there in the middle. You want a guy that has confidence of a bad boy. But if he's all bad boy, dad's going to pick up on that. That's just kind of my litmus test. And so if he's a bad boy, dad will pick up on that. You don't want that. So you're right. You want the confidence from the bad boy. But then there's these nice guys. I call them soft belly guys. These are guys who they find themselves in relationships not necessarily on purpose. When you really listen to the story of, oh, how did you guys meet? It's usually a story of, well, the circumstances were just, they just sort of fell into place. Whereas the bad boy, if he's the confident guy, I should say, he will seek out, you know, if he sees a woman, he'll chase her, basically. And anyway, so, but the soft belly guy is a nice guy. And so when life gets tough, if you're in a long-term relationship with a nice guy, and things get tough, he will sacrifice and stick it out and work through it and still be a pretty decent guy. So the trait that I think women want from the nice guy, and it's a little tricky, is kindness. And I think we talk about this. It's what we don't like about nice guys is they're pushovers, basically. But what we do like about them is kindness. Kindness is a choice. It's a guy who I'm choosing to be kind right now, and I'm confident. And how does that sound? If you had a guy who was confident like a bad boy without the badness, but he would choose to be kind, to open the door and take the lead and make the phone calls and you know, that kind of stuff. How would that sound?
That sounds pretty good. Although with me, I'm like, the litmus test comes down to mom, not as much dad. But
yeah. Right. That's probably true.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, yeah, I was like, no, dad's the easier one when it comes to my relationships personally. But...
Yeah. Because mom will sit down and have a talk with the guy, right?
Well, she lives in another state, so you have to really paint a great picture for her to buy in because she can't be here to meet him. So
Well, I have a question for you, Carly.
Uh-huh.
How do you know? How long does it take before you know you found the guy who's right there in the middle? I mean, what kind of things need to happen? Here's why I'm asking. I have guys come in to see me either as for coaching or counseling, and I find they are in a relationship that they just went way too far too fast, and now they want an extra, and they've done things like they bought a house together, or you know what I mean? I mean money's involved, there's pets, you know, animals involved, they'll get pets together, and then they when they really open up, they're saying things like, God, I don't know why I did this, I'm just I wish I had enough, and now they want to get out. So, and I know women get into that too. So what, how long does it take, and what do you look for? Big sigh.
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is being much more present in the moment than I think mm-hmm. anyone truly is.
Yeah? They're thinking of other things?
Well, not necessarily that, but that's just, you know, what popped into my mind first. So I guess, and that's more addressing what the problem is versus how do you know.
Right. No, I'm with you.
Yeah. So, you know, are we being in the moment? Are we really following that gut instinct, or are we following our logical brains?
Yeah, right.
Like, does this really feel right, or is this mm-hmm. what I think I should be doing and what society says I should be doing and what my partner says I should be doing?
Right. Yeah. So what is the progression? I'll just ask the question. There's this progression of commitment levels that go up and up as the relationship goes on longer. And it starts, you know, there's the initial text, oh, I saw you at a party, or I saw you at you know, an event or whatever. Would you like to get coffee or drinks or dinner? And so there's some texting that goes on first, right? And mm-hmm. and then maybe a phone call, or there's a meetup, I guess. And then it's working out. There's a fair amount of dating, maybe, and then what happens? I have a lot of people coming in. They move in together really quick, before they really know much about this person. And what do you think?
I think that's really interesting, and I wonder what kind of economics are playing into that.
Right. I hear things like, "Well, we're together all the time, so why don't we get a place together, and we'll save some money." Is that what you mean?
Yeah, and especially living in the state of Colorado,
that's
a huge factor. But, and I think that, again, goes to listening to that gut instinct, that intuition.
Yeah, right,
You know, that's always going to guide you in the right direction. It's just a matter of believing and trusting in it.
Right. So I guess you spend some time talking about that with your clients, huh?
Yes. And, you know, it was a huge lesson I had to learn myself. So, in fact, I was talking to a client about it today. You know, trusting that, you know, gut is really what's going to progress you in the right direction. And well, that can actually bring up some stuff. So, you know, so conflict's inevitable in relationships. You know, learning each other's conflict style is part of the process of growing in a relationship. Talk a bit about that, Rick, because I know you're the expert in talking about conflict.
Right. Well, there's two windows that I see into a person's relationship, long-term relationship, like a marriage, and or dating for a long time, and sex is one of them. I mean, sex doesn't lie. I mean, people lie about their sex, but when you really get them talking and they're being honest about it, you can really see what's going on in the dynamic of the relationship by their sex life. But you can also see it through the way they have arguments. And let me say it this way. An argument or a conflict happens because somebody wants something and they're not getting it. And how they ask for it has everything to do with how the fight goes. So this is kind of what I do. I break down the argument into its smaller pieces and sort of put it into slow motion, because it happens so fast for us that we get into an argument with somebody, and then somebody, either we say it or the other person says it, they say something kind of personal, but it's a dig. And our little engine gets revved up, and they're like, I can't believe he just said that. And then we come back with our comeback. And it just escalates the intensity of the argument. Well, there are people that have developed, so when that happens, when the intensity gets too high, we have developed ways to cope with that. So some people will shut down, like in the middle of an argument, and if it gets too intense, there'll be one of these. Well, fine, I'm done. I'm out of here. And or some people will just keep going, and in their mind they're thinking, if I just say it with more intensity and maybe some cuss words, or maybe I mention your mom, you'll finally hear me what I'm trying to say. And so all that does is just increases the intensity. So some people shut down, and some people get on the offensive. They become really critical and judgmental and contemptuous. So on one hand, you have a person who's on the defense, and on the other hand, you have somebody who's on the offense. And they're both fighting styles. So a lot of people that I come across these guys who have a style of arguing that's, well, I'm the shutdown guy. And I say, why? What would happen if you didn't shut down? And he'll say, I don't know. I've never – they'll say something like, it'll get really bad, really bad. And so on the other hand – so there's the shutdown guy, which is still a fighting style, and it still creates resentments. And that's why getting to know your fighting style is really important, because when we go into an argument and we just let it go and it spirals into something really intense, there's probably going to be a resentment. And those are those things that over time, as the relationship keeps going, resentments sound like this. You're in the car on the way to the mountains, you know, I'm going to have a great time, and the passenger, whoever it is, man or woman, grabs the handle on top of the door and pushes his feet into the floor, and he's like, stop! You know, and the driver, she's driving, she says, what is your problem? And there's a car right in front of them. No, and they get into an argument about how close the car in front of them was. And then somebody says, it's just like that time 3 years ago. And then we go back to that story from 3 years ago. That's what a resentment is. It's that gift that keeps giving.
Yes.
So a lot of couples, this is where I was going a little bit before, learning how to argue is a great way to get to know if this is the right person to be with. Because if the person has this ability to be in an argument and stop in the middle of it and go, wait a minute, I'm sorry it came out that way. Can we try this again? Can we do this in a different way? This is really what I wanted you to hear. And somebody who can do that has, they've learned how to argue in a way that's going to be really healthy. So that's what when I see guys, they'll come out of divorce and they'll come see me about kind of restarting their life and they'll get into a relationship really quick. And it gets really hot and heavy really quick, and they fall right back into the same patterns. And I hate seeing that. That's why conflict is one of those things. It's like I said, it's like sex. It's a good window into seeing how the relationship goes. So, I mean, if you're dating, you know, how long does it take before an argument comes up? And you don't dismiss it. You know, sort of at the beginning, we're all putting on our best face. And then,
right.
You know, so how far in do we start getting real?
I think totally is dependent or is based on the comfort level.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's
and how
true.
Safe you feel with that person. So, yeah. Unfortunately, relationships aren't cookie cutter, so it's not the same for everyone. We can always generalize, but we can't ever say it's this way for this person and that way for that person. Rick, it looks like we actually have a caller calling in with a question or a comment. Shall we take that question?
No, let's ignore them and just keep going. let's do it.
Hello, you are on the air with Carly and Rick.
Hello, Carly. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'd like to ask you a guest. Hi, how you doing? I'd like to ask you a question.
Yeah, what's
like
your name?
My name is Gigi.
Hi, Gigi. All right.
I'd like to ask you a question. Why do you think all the nice guys are pushovers?
Oh, right. That's a really good question, and it's a Well, that's a word that's a phrase we use to identify a set of guys, don't we? You're right. Guys who are nice are not pushovers. But I like to use the word kind instead of nice. I guess, you know, Carly, we've talked about this. There's this phrase, nice guys, and somewhere along the way, it got to be a bad thing to be a nice guy.
You're right. You know, there's stereotypes with both the nice guys and the bad boys. So, you know, nice guy has this reputation of pushover is one word you can use, but just lacking in a sense of leadership. They tend to lack the masculine energy, which I've talked about on the show before. So masculine energy is goal-oriented. It's very straightforward movement. It's aggressive. It's competition.
Right.
It is leadership. Where nice guys tend to hold more feminine energy. And feminine energy is a more expansive movement, and it is nurturing, caring, open, surrendering.
Yep.
So pushover isn't necessarily a great term to use for a nice guy, but it explains the lack of leadership, standing your ground, and it explains more of the surrender. So a friend once asked, do nice guys always finish last? And I said, well, yeah, because you don't go after what you want.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Well, I have a good guy, and he is not a cinnamon or a pushover.
Good for him. That's the best kind. It sounds like you found the kind of guy we were talking about before. He's got his center. He's got his core, but he's still he's a nice guy. That's the best kind of guy to have. Yeah, and those aren't the kind of guys we're talking about. That's why I like coming up with a word like soft belly guys, because that's not a word we use. But there are guys who have accepted a script that they've been given, and they don't own it. You know, this is what my dad wanted me to do, or this is how I was. Here's a big one. My parents showed me how to do marriage. They showed me how to be in relationship, and so this is how I've always done it. This is kind of what I hear from some clients. And so they're just accepting that, and that's kind of a lazy way to approach a relationship. So, yeah, that's a great question, though.
Thank you.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah, thanks for calling in.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, Carly, so... Do you see a lot of that out there? You're in the dating world. Are there a lot of guys who are in the middle? Yeah.
Well, not in the middle, but being that I tend to attract more of not in the middle and the nice guys personally. So.
Okay.
but I believe they're out there. You're right. We need to coin a phrase for that guy in the middle.
Yeah.
The guy who has it figured out. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the confident, kind guy. Because being kind, like I said, it's a choice, and that requires some depth. You know, he has to know what he wants, and because there's a payoff to being kind.
Right, and there's, that they should have a lot of that masculine energy, but part of that feminine pokes through, like the yin and the yang symbol. So,
right.
You know, he has all the masculine qualities that we like, but he does have a place in him where he can be sensitive, he can be kind, he can be caring.
Right.
You know, he can hold that space for you.
Yeah. Right. There is a message. I'm hearing some guys say that there's this message out there that, women are finding their power, they're finding their place in the workforce, and a lot of guys I see, their wives work. And so there is a power struggle for who's going to be the leader in the marriage. I see that a lot, too. And
right, and I do as well.
Yeah, right.
And even with single women.
Is that right?
You know,
yeah?
I work or I own a business, but
mm-hmm.
how do I kind of transition into that feminine spot?
Yeah, yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
What do you tell them?
Well, you know, it's about, you know, changing the tone when you talk.
Right.
You know, taking deep breaths, wearing more feminine clothing, so, you know, skirt or something that's more flowing. But how, what do you do, what can you do to really step into your feminine energy? So I love to dance. I find my own personal feminine energy comes out very strongly when I dance.
Yeah.
So,
ah.
Yeah, and I was, you know, talking to Joanna Kennedy a couple weeks ago, or no, it was just last week. No, it was 2 weeks ago, sorry. And we talked about this, and I said, you know, I find men, when I meet men that I sustain better relationships with when I'm out with my girlfriends dancing than any other place.
Yeah, right, right, right.
And it's because I'm in that feminine flow.
Yep.
So it's just a matter of finding what your feminine, what brings out your feminine essence. So if it's being creative, if it's cooking, if it's painting, whatever it is, it's getting in touch with that. So, you know, and I often make the mistake. I'll do a pure romance party, and I'm still on, like, pure romance mode, and someone calls me on the way home, and I am in high masculine energy mode, and when I need to kind of step back and go,
right.
And have that softer tone to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
right, that's a big deal right now because, like I said, most of the guys I work with, their wives work, and they're, you know, they're high power jobs too, so. Plus kids, and so two jobs, kids, pets, parents are aging. It all sort of hits at once.
Right,
so,
right. So it's I like to call it the masculine feminine dance. So how do you do this? You know, like I wanted to say salsa, but that's not a very elegant dance. as fun as it is, and it's a great way to practice masculine feminine energy, may I say. But you know, like how do you do that waltz? How do you elegantly move back and forth? So,
well, you know this more than I would. Is there a dance out there that has partners that there is not a lead? Doesn't every dance where at least you're holding each other it has a lead, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, every couple's dance, yes.
Every couple's dance, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I was
referring to the elegance of, like, a waltz versus salsa, which is a little rougher and much more primal.
So
awesome. Well, we were talking right before Gigi called in, we were talking about conflict, and being that the holidays are coming around and it can be a very high conflict time for people, what do you suggest in order to kind of get through it with ease?
Right, right. Well, the 30-second advice that I have to give is totally original. I came up with this all on my own, and here it is. You ready? I'm going to hit you with it. It is take a break. I just came up with that. That's amazing, huh? No, you take a break. So in a conflict, like I said, the intensity a lot of times for a lot of people will ramp up and keep ramping up. And if you've been at it long enough together, you know how you each fight, and you probably know how this particular fight you're in is going to go. So if you don't want it to end that way, then make a change. And the easiest change to make is to take a break. And the way to do that is you have to set it up ahead of time. So you have this conversation before your next argument, and it goes something like this. Honey, we're probably going to get in a fight. The therapist on the radio said that fighting is inevitable, so we should probably come up with a plan. And the plan is we don't have to say anything. We find something like an object in the house, could be, you know, could be a plunger from under the kitchen sink, and we put it down, If somebody puts down the identified object, that means we're taking at least a 20-minute break where we just go get some food or we go for a walk or just take a break away from each other and let the intensity come back down a little bit. That's really it. And it can go over from 20 minutes over to 24 hours. So you can go to bed angry, actually. And actually, sometimes that's exactly what needs to happen. And then pick it back up, because I guarantee if it's important, it'll still be there, you know, when you come back together. But for guys, the research shows that when guys get into a conflict like that, they've got their heart rate goes up, cortisol goes up, adrenaline goes up, and it stays up longer than it does for women. It also goes up in women as well, but for men, it stays up longer. So that's what the 20 minutes is about. That can be hard for some people to sit on a conflict and not talk about it and not, let's get into this, come on. And but, you know, it's a discipline. And the reason to do it is because I care enough about you that I don't want to get into a conflict where I create yet another resentment. Let's not do that. And let's set ourselves up to get what we want and still go into conflict, get what we want, but not create another resentment. And the cool thing about that is, Carly, is that it creates more intimacy. So if you think about this, as we learn to argue together, we begin to learn more about each other's tolerance for how personal can I make my statements? How close can I get to you without you pushing me back or closing down? And that dynamic right there is exactly what happens in intimacy, because intimacy is also about how close can I get to you without you pushing me away or shutting down. And as we learn to argue together and go into areas that we probably wouldn't have gone before, it turns out our intimacy also can go deeper if we're not creating resentments. That's actually the real key. And so there's a cycle to it. There's intimacy on one side of the cycle and conflict on the other. And they go together.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Well, yeah. I'd love to talk more about tolerating intimacy, but we have to go to a commercial break. So Rick and I will be right back in just a few.
All right.
Hey, this is Alvin. And this is Calvin. We're the godsons of the late legendary Godfather Soul himself, Mr. James Brown. We'll be at the 2016 Old School Celebrity Reunion in Reno, Nevada, June 5th, 2016, brought to you by Faces of Success Radio. And as the Godfather always told us, whatever we do, it's got to be funky. See you there. Good God.
On the floor, nothing on me, and I can't take it no more. So
And welcome back to Dating, Mating, and Relating with Carly Stein on FacesOfSuccessRadio.com. I have Rick Taylor as my guest this evening.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been talking about all sorts of fun things, but Rick mainly works with men. And for those of you listening live, you can call into the show at 323-642-1569. Just dial 1 if you have any questions or comments for Rick or myself.
Mm-hmm.
So, we talked about tolerating intimacy that we were going to talk about. Tolerating
mm-hmm.
intimacy
yep.
and how it determines who we attract and whom we are attracted to.
Right.
So tell
right.
us a bit about that, Rick.
Right. Well, there's this idea out there. And all this that I'm – well, yeah, there's this idea that we're not going to get intimate. And when I say intimate, I'm not talking strictly just sex. Sex can happen within intimacy, right? This intimacy is when I can feel like I can be myself with somebody and she feels like she can be herself, and that happens at the same time when we're together. And that creates a deeper intimacy. And so that's what I mean by intimacy. But not everybody, you know, we all have a different level of safety. I mean, I grew up and I learned I'm not going to be completely open with everybody. I mean, who would do that? So I have my own level of tolerance for how vulnerable or open I'm going to be with somebody. And in my past, I have come across people who are really open and ready to go, and it's fun at first, but it seems off. There's something not natural about it, and that's when our tolerances don't match. And either the person is too tolerant or they're not tolerant enough, and so we go on one date or two dates, but then it's sort of a, you know, it's just not a good fit. And there's no – I've had those, you know – where the dating's been going on and then it's time to break up and there's not a really good reason. I don't know if you've ever hit this, but mm-hmm. there's just not, well, why are you breaking up with me? Well, I don't really know. So I sort of have had to make up a reason, and that's happened to me once. I do remember that. But the reason was, really, I don't know why. I just know that this isn't going to go anywhere, and I don't know how else to say it. That did not go over very well. So, I don't recommend saying that, but I don't know. Do you think that's true? Do you think it's possible that sometimes it's just not a good fit and we don't know why?
Well, yeah, and that's, again, going, you know, following that gut instinct.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So something doesn't feel right. I can't pinpoint what it is, but it just doesn't feel right, and if I don't break it off, I'm not honoring myself.
Right.
But at the same time, we like tangible things we can hold on to.
Yeah, right.
And that's not a very tangible thing to hold on to because you can start – all you do is start questioning, well, what was wrong with me that this person isn't telling me about?
Yeah, you know, if it ever happens to me again, I'm just going to make something up. It's going to be smell. It's because you smell. I'm sorry. You just –
I wouldn't say that. Or there's the, it's not you, it's just me. Are you kidding?
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, it's more, you know, I'm not seeing a future with this.
Yeah, right.
I can't exactly explain why I'm just not seeing it.
Yeah. So one of the reasons is this level of tolerance for intimacy. And, mm-hmm. you know, sex can happen without intimacy, but eventually it should start happening because that's kind of what we're after. We want to recreate what we think is supposed to happen in childhood, where we are accepted and we're acknowledged and we're loved and for who we are, for who we really are. And that's what intimacy feels like, right? And so, you know, when couples get that fire going, that intimacy fire going, it's way better than just guys telling me this all the time. Women, you know, when I mention this, they're like, really? Yeah, guys would rather have sex that's got a lot of intimacy in there with it. That's way better than just straight up regular sex. And it's amazing. Guys will come right out and just say that. So, yeah. And So there's this level of tolerance. So I'll give you an example. There's a couple. This is a story I tell. I think I told you before. And then, so there's a couple in the car, right? And they've been together. They had some intimacy, whatever that looked like. And they're in the car to go have dinner and celebrate. And he says, so honey, where do you want to go eat? And she says, I don't care, wherever you want to go. And he says, how about Mexican food? And she says, no, I don't want Mexican food. And he says, now, you have to pause, so I'm going to put this story on pause. And so in his mind, he's going, ha-ha, okay. First she said she didn't care where, and now she's saying she doesn't want Mexican. So I've caught her in this, I don't know, moment of incongruency. So we put the story back in play, and he says, I thought you didn't care where we ate. What's your deal? Right? And takes a dig at her. And she responds back like, well, I don't have a problem. What's your problem? And I don't have a problem. You know, so like within 30 seconds, they're in this huge fight over where to go have dinner. And that happens because there's this, their level of tolerance for intimacy is out of sync. She was thinking, oh, this is the guy for me. I can be myself. I can be completely, you know, vulnerable with this guy. And it's okay if I don't want to eat just anywhere. I don't want Mexican food. And he decides to take a dig at her right at that moment of vulnerability. And it ruins that moment where she thought she could be vulnerable. And so now she's learned, oh, I can't. I can't be vulnerable like I was hoping. And might even create a moment of resentment that she'll pull from. The next time they're in a moment of intimacy, she'll pull back. Because now she has this experience. And so there's a lot of couples out there that get into these kinds of arguments that they're over nothing. They're like, where to go eat, or what do you want to do? I don't know, what do you want to do? And it's just because there's this environment of tension around a lot of times it's just we're not in sync with each other. So that's something I dig into a little bit is how we develop that, and again, the window to see that is how they argue. So if their arguments are, they just spiral into this huge intensity really fast, then there's probably something going on around safety. And I don't mean physical safety. I mean like emotional safety. How safe can I feel with this person? So,
right.
Yeah. Right. So, and of course it shows up in the bedroom too, right?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Right.
So actually I was thinking about this cause the song, the song I played was, I want you to want me. I was like, oh wait, we kind of talked a bit about this before. So,
right.
For a lot of people, there's a burden of being wanted and a burden of wanting.
Yeah, right. Well, so in the beginning of a relationship, being wanted feels really nice. It's like getting hired for a job, right? You put yourself out there, you've done the interview, and, oh, they love me. They love, it feels great. And that goes away after the relationship keeps going. And then it goes from, he wants me or she wants me to, and it can take some time, could take some years, might take some kids involved, but at some point the priorities change and being wanted by this person doesn't have the same impact as it used to. In fact, it becomes a burden for a lot of people. And for the other person who's doing the wanting, it also is a burden because they know it's a vulnerable place. It gets back to their level of tolerance for intimacy. You know, if they know they're going to be rejected, she's not going to put herself out there. And so there's a burden to being the wanter, to do the wanting when you know it's not going to be reciprocated, or you believe that there's, a 50% chance it won't. So that's a burden, and we don't really think of it that way, but being wanted for a lot of people it gets old because there's an obligation that comes with it, and when I bring that out, especially when I've been working with couples in the past, they'll never have thought of it that way, and You know, if it's the woman who's the one feeling burdened, she'll be, oh my God, yes, that's it. It's an obligation. It's a burden because I have so many other things going on in my life. And like you said, I'm glad you brought this up. I don't feel feminine. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do sex because I don't feel feminine. And then here comes the biggie, and he doesn't help me get there. Oh,
yeah.
Man, that opens it up. So, was that okay to go there right there?
It's okay. Go for it.
All right. So yeah, you see how they're all sort of tied together. There's a writer. She's a speaker. There's a really good TED Talk, a talk on TED Talk. Her name is Esther Perel, and she talks about this. There's this burden to being wanted, and there's a burden to being the one who does the wanting. And it changes during the course of the relationship. We get older, our bodies change, the chemicals in our bloodstreams change, our circumstances change, and we're not always in sync. And so it feels like rejection. It can feel like burden. And a lot of couples have this message that sex needs to be this way. It should always be pleasurable. It should always be fun, or it should always be easy. It should always, whatever it is, whatever the story is. And a lot of us are not ready for that story to change. That's a big source of conflict for a lot of couples that I've noticed. So how to know how to handle that on the front end? I've been giving advice to just slow down a little bit. This is where I was going when I mentioned this ladder of commitments. Starts with the text, then the date, then the long phone calls and more dating. And a lot of people they put their money into the relationship when they haven't really developed some of the basics. Basics like trust and communication. They haven't really had enough arguments to learn that, wow, we don't really communicate very well. And then they mix their money and so I'm jumping ahead, but it sort of fits together with this because what I'm talking about is the longevity of the relationship. And because that's what I deal with. People come see me when they've been in a relationship for a while. And so yeah. Now you're more on the front end of the relationship when you with your clients, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I am. So I mostly work with people who are preparing for a relationship. So help guiding them. So I like to call it removing the brick walls, removing the brick pieces one by one, so someone's more open to love. And of course, I also focus on women in relationship and single.
For
confidence and sexuality. But in terms of, what I mostly do is, you're right, on the front end. So
how do
we prepare for this? And it's always looking, someone once said to me that they were, going to meet someone, and he had the key to her heart, and he was going to make everything happy. And I was like, no.
Why?
I said, well, what if you had the key to your own heart? Like, it's all about looking inward. So that's what I help people do, is really get clear about what they want, and then removing those brick walls that are preventing them from having it.
Right. And you know what? It's more attractive to have that, there's attractive people physically, they're attractive or whatever, but having that confidence that I know myself well enough to know what I want and what I don't want, that's huge. I guess it kind of goes back to the confidence of the bad boy, but that's part of it, is a guy like that knows what he wants. And for a woman to know what she wants and what she doesn't want, that's
right.
Big. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, good work.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's the stuff I needed to learn. So it's, I was definitely given that Sorry, I was just messaged over a question.
Oh, okay.
Oh, this is an interesting question, and we have a few minutes left to cover
okay.
it. But
yeah.
So the question was, what's up with these guys that now expect the women to pay for everything?
I'm with you on that one. It's, yeah, what is up with that? Well, all right, if I had to step in their shoes, then I'll be empathetic here for a moment. Guys are going to say, well, she's got a job. She probably makes more money or at least as much as I do. Why can't she pay? And you're right, I've been hearing this, where they'll go Dutch, you know, for the first four dates or whatever until there's some magical moment where they decide, oh, I think this is going to work out. Okay, you start paying now. I mean, I don't get that. That just tells
just
me.
Just hearing
the guy,
it makes my whole body like, ugh. Like I got to shake that off.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, I don't know what to say to that. That's tough. I think that's where it's coming from, though. Is yeah, guys have been dating a while and they feel. Boy, I don't want to say because I'm just making stuff up. I do know the single guys that I've talked to, they do come. It's like they've come out of a war zone. They're out of the foxhole and they've come back to talk to the therapist in the back of the line, and they're like, "This is really hard." They don't. Now I'm talking to older guys who've come out of a marriage or a long relationship and they're getting back into it. And
right.
I guess they tell me things like it's changed since they've been dating and it's intense. There's the online apps that are out there make it really, I don't know, there's the focus is on like the 30-second elevator pitch, if that makes sense.
Right.
That's
definitely.
What I've heard. Is that right?
Well, there's a lot of focus on it, and a lot of people get it very, very wrong. Hello, the picture on Tinder is your advertisement. So having
right.
a picture of your cat or your dogs or your kid isn't probably going to get you very far.
Right.
Or
right,
you
right, right.
and a group of people, so I have to try and figure out who the heck you are. But, you know, that comes down to setting the tone for the rest of the first date sets the tone
right.
for the rest of the relationship.
Right.
So,
you know what, I'm a little hard edge on this, and I'm a little, judgmental about it. My take is it's a date is an investment, and it's an investment in the possibility that this relationship is going to work out. And that's what it is. And
yeah.
a guy should know himself well enough to know the kind of woman he's looking for. And if this one is the right one, he should have already qualified her. I hate to say it that way, but
right.
he should have qualified her enough to know that he's ready to invest. And,
right.
you know, and it goes the other way. It goes the other direction too. She's going to put in time and she's not going to be dating someone else because usually, I don't know, do women have on the online sites, it's not 2-1, but it's like for every 10 guys, there's 6 or 7 women. So women have an email box full of choices,
well,
right?
It's actually interesting because the odds are better for men than they are for women. There are
really?
More single women than there are men in a statistic I recently read.
Wow.
Yes, on I think it was Huffington huh. Post or something, which
yeah.
was really interesting. It's I think people are moving too quick. So
yeah.
you don't want
right.
to, you know, it's like, well, you know, well, I want to take her to do something she wants, so I ask her what she wants to do. And I was like, well, yeah, you should be talking to her and communicating enough to figure out what she likes.
Right, right.
And then planning
otherwise,
it.
Yeah, otherwise it's basically just a blind date. And so you don't know
right.
what to do. So do what you like to do. And
yeah.
and if she likes it, great. If she doesn't, well, then that's a sign.
Yeah.
And there's no bad signs. There's just results. That's kind of how I work it. Is
yeah.
you know, if it doesn't work out, that's okay. That's one less person that you're going to have to get divorced from.
Right. You know, and that's a, you know, like, don't go in, you know, don't, if it doesn't work out, don't have resentment towards it. My goodness. But, you know, Rick, we are at an hour. Can you believe it?
Is that right?
It went by so quick. Yes. So we're going to have you back on the show because, like I said, well, it has been proven we can talk for hours, probably all day long if we really, really had time for it. So, Rick, how can people find out more about you?
My company is called TouchBase Counseling, and the website is touchbasecounseling.com, one word. And real quick, I also do men's groups because, like I said, guys don't want to go to counseling if they don't have to, unless it's really bad. But I do offer a men's group. And guys, a lot of guys, when they were kids, we were on soccer teams or football teams. And having that dynamic of a group with a coach, it's guys are used to that. So I do men's groups. And I got one coming up January 11th.
Wonderful. So if you're in the Denver area, you can definitely check that out. And I will be announcing in a couple weeks a new program I have for singles coming out in January. Woo! So I want to, of course, thank everyone for listening. And thank you so much, Rick, for being on the show.
Thanks, Carly. Yeah, my pleasure. Yeah. Let's do it again.
Yes. I'm so excited, and we will talk with you soon. So thank you so much.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. So, again, that was Rick Taylor with TouchBase Counseling, and he can be reached at touchbasecounseling.com. And, again, thank you, everyone, for listening. Coming up, we have my great friend Marilyn Pitchford, who will be talking about energy and relationship, which is going to be extremely fascinating. And moving forward to next year, we are doing a men's tell-all and a women's tell-all show. So you can catch me on Facebook, facebook.com/Carly Stein. You can also join my new Facebook group, Dating, Mating, and Relating with Carly Stein. And I look forward to connecting with everyone. Have a great evening.